Hello and welcome to part two of the Tarleton podcast interview with Brian McDermott and Jem Carachan. I'm your host, Mark Moe. In the last episode, we talked about all the time on the pitch with the championship winning season, the playoff final, up to the Legends game, and all the way back to the start of Jem's career working under Brian in the reserves. This part two, a bit of a shorter episode, but is focused on the off-pitch side of things for Brian and Jem. Brian, who came out, revealed last year he had alcohol issues that he suffered with for many years and is now several years sober, which he talks about in his public speaking, and Jem, who recently officially retired from the game and is now finding his feet post-playing. So, please enjoy.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
You've got a interesting, multifaceted career, I understand, now as a public speaker. Still doing a bit of scouting, I understand. And you said mentoring coaches and stuff like that. Yeah. So how does that work? How did you put your day together now?
I did a course with the LMA about mentoring, because I talked about mentoring managers, and I always think about coaches and managers and even players, you know. What I wanted as a manager, really, I was lucky I had Steve, but I didn't speak to Steve that often when I was managing Reading, but obviously I learned a lot from Steve because I worked so closely with Steve. But I think mentoring managers as coaches is vital. I think players having mentors like Jem now, you know, Jem's not playing anymore. He'd be an amazing mentor for an 18, 19, 20 year old boy finding his way, you know, and like Simon Church and people like that, great people. You know, to Hal Canoe, what Hal was doing as well in his life, and Shane at some point when he stopped playing, just to be around football players and help them. So, and I do a bit of scouting. I look at the lower leagues, and I just put a young boy into Orient who signed a year and a half contract, and he's been loaned out to Kings Langley, and I watched him play yesterday, and it's nice I can be there for him. And then I've been doing lots of presentations. Doing one this week, I did a couple last week, one at Crystal Palace, one at another club, just talking about the journey and what it's like and what it was like for me as a player and what it was like for me as a manager and all the stuff that goes with that, and I enjoy doing that, really. It's the best purpose work I've ever done, I feel.
So what sort of reception do you get from the players of today? Do they ask you questions that are totally different, that you wouldn't have even thought of as back then as a player yourself and everything? How is it with players today?
Nope, exactly the same. And all the sort of feelings that I've spoken about and I speak about in my presentation, they're still there. They don't change. And then it's about how you deal with those feelings that you've got as a player. You know, do I talk about it? Do I keep it to myself? As a manager, do I talk about it? Do I keep it to myself? And what I've learned is keeping it to yourself, it just builds up and builds up and builds up, and it gets worse and worse and worse. And you need to find someone you can actually talk to. And I talk about that. And I always leave my email there if anyone wants to reach out.
Yeah.
I'm not a counsellor. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm someone who's lived in that world since I was 16, 14.
You speak about your experience.
That's all I do. And that's, you know, I can only do that. Yeah. And then they might say, well, what do you do today to feel whatever you want to feel? And then I talk about that. That's only my experience.
Well, I suppose I listened to a podcast the other day, the 1871 podcast, where you're saying about your like morning routine and stuff like that. And you do that because that's what is best for you.
For me.
And I guess that's kind of what you're preaching, is that you, as players,
I'm definitely not preaching.
Well, I mean, you're kind of preaching that whether you want 100 grand, whether you're playing for like lowly club, whatever, you have to find what is right for you.
Yeah, look, it doesn't matter what you're earning, you know, and people will say, well, if you've got a lot of money, then it's easier. Maybe it is. Of course it is. You've got a roof over your head and you've got food and you've got something. Yeah, it's easier. Of course it is. And you can't take that for granted, but then, you know, you write what you're grateful for. For me, I'm grateful for it's the smaller things in life now. Mm. I've got my wife back. I've got my kids. You know, I've got people like Jem, who's a great guy, you know, I can pick the phone up to, and I've worked with great people in the past, and I see it now a lot clearer than I did.
Yeah.
You know, I can see it for what it is, and the moments now, it gives me a bit of a glow now, whereas before I had a sort of numb feeling constantly. It was like a feeling of not good enough, needs to be better, everything needed to be better all the time, which is difficult to keep dealing with.
Do you think as a player you would have benefited from that sort of like discussion stuff? I don't know what the club would have, you know, brought in people to have these talks, whether you had that as a teenager, but do you think you would have benefited from that?
100%. It was something I think anyone from our group would need, and probably our group need it now. Like, you know, the transition's tough unless you kind of walk into, you know, where people can kind of call it down in their terms and move into a really good role. But, you know, I was fortunate enough that when I did my knee, my first kind of introduction to speaking to someone how I feel was through Nigel Atkins, and he let me sit down with someone and kind of just discuss, because I was thinking my career's done and trying to talk about those feelings. But now it's, yeah, of course, it's definitely tough, and obviously speaking to Brian and seeing his story, I think he'll tell you, not, we didn't know. We didn't know what our gaffer was going through, and in general, I think football's such a closed thing. With lads never want to discuss their feelings, or lads never want to talk about, because I think you're always worried that, well, if I tell him I'm struggling, I'm not playing. Like, and I think there's definitely that kind of mentality still. I know it's getting a little bit better, but no, like, obviously speaking to Brian now and speaking to Churchy and PSC, people like that, you know, it's strange, the transition. I think it's difficult, very difficult.
Do you think, I mean, in that moment as a squad, you probably wouldn't have wanted to have known that what Brian was going through? Would it have, in your position at that time, if someone would have said, you know, got this thing to tell you, do you think you've almost would have preferred to shut it out and just think, I want to focus on the football?
But I think because it's not discussed, you don't know how to
to
deal with that stuff. I mean, we were just young, like, we didn't know how to deal with ourselves, let alone I think other things. But I think now in the game, when you obviously the presentations you hear, I think, you know, people are opening up and being more understanding, but I don't know how we'd react to
it wasn't really about that. I think for me, I was always going to keep that hidden. That was, you know, I was struggling to get out of bed sometimes, but that was never going to be something that I was quite good at. Like, I wanted to look after Jem and the lads and the staff, and I wanted to, it was really important to me, but I forgot to look after myself. And then you get to a point when you do burn out, you know, you struggle. So I was never going to bring that to the table. But what I could have done is brought it to the table for myself and have a conversation with someone outside.
Like a safe
club
environment.
Like, not saying it wasn't safe, but it wouldn't have been appropriate. I didn't feel it was appropriate to bring that to the table, and I wouldn't have done it because that would have affected the group and the club.
Was there any fear when you were going through your kind of alcohol issues that it would have come out in the media? Did you ever think about that as a potential thing?
I could drink a lot, and Nigel Gibbs was very close to me. Nigel, you know, Nigel didn't know. Nigel would never drunk, but he would watch me drink, and he could see. He would go, "Wow, I don't know what he thought." But I spoke to him recently about it. But I could deal with that drink, and, you know, still function at a high level. But I would always wake up in the morning with that feeling of distress, and that feeling of not feeling good enough, and that feeling of like anxiety. And that was the problem. And once I'd started, I could go long periods without having a drink. But once I started having a drink, I couldn't stop. And that was it. That was it in a nutshell, really. And I'm obsessive. I'm, you know, like, if I want to get a plan, I'm obsessive about a lot of things, which can be a good thing. You know, it can be a good thing. But I have to say, I was never going to bring that to the table with the players. No, it wasn't about that. It was just wish that I could have spoken to someone and said, no, I'm struggling on this, and maybe had a conversation about it. That would have helped.
Yeah. Were there any, not that I would expect you at all to name any names and that sort of stuff, but were there any players that you ever came across that had issues, whether it was gambling? I mean, sometimes I've heard stories about like players gaming until like 4 in the morning every morning, can't, you know. Was there any players that you ever came across that had those sort of issues?
Yeah, I've had players that, you know, that have had issues. And that's, you know,
Scotty Davies, who does it as well.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Scotty's in the public domain, isn't he?
Yeah. So,
And was that something that you knew about at the time?
I don't know. I think we didn't really know the extent. It was with Scotty and that. I think Scotty was a second year, so when we joined, we were first years. But they used to. So for example, Education Day, we used to go, like, obviously have our school time and then go to get a baguette. And I always used to see Scotty and a couple of the other lads go into the bookies. Mm. And Scotty, obviously, he speaks openly about that now. And it was always a little bit, and it became more and more. But we kind of knew that there was that side, but it was almost like it was just whatever.
Yeah.
But I remember there was once we came in to training, again, he speaks about, and someone had punched him, and he came in with, like, a huge jaw, and we were like, oh, Scott, you're right, like, what's going on? And then it's not till when, like, you speak to him now, what he was going through, and you just didn't know, like, and you almost don't have, in a horrible way, you don't have time to,
because your own career has taken up so much, like, mental capacity.
The young kids coming through, and the way the reason we made it is with Eamon was because we were so, like, tunnel vision. This is what you need to do to make it a footballer. Like, this is what you need to do. You didn't take anything else in, almost. It's strange, but no, like, listening to someone like Scott now, it's like, wow, like, if only there was someone for him to speak to then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the good thing is now that people speak about it, and you can, like I say, even now when I've struggled coming out of the game, well, to a certain degree, you can speak to these people, and they are the first ones to go, are you okay? Like, first thing they did when I saw him was like, are you okay?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I'm all right. Like, how are you? So it's good to have that now.
Yeah. So speaking about your retirement then, I know from your Instagram, you're at games pretty much every night of the week, going to under-21s and all sorts. Is that a career thing, or is that just to go and watch and enjoy football?
So about 6-7 months ago, Millwall offered me a role to start scouting for them.
Mm.
Which, you know, it got me kind of out of the house and going to watch games, and kind of, I think the biggest thing for me when I was potentially finishing football was just, I think we spoke about this, didn't we, like, accepting you were finished.
Yeah.
And I couldn't accept it. I didn't want to put it out there that I was done. I was always kind of, like, hanging on.
Yeah.
So, you know, just kind of putting it out there that I was done, and then going into the next step and trying to enjoy football for what it is, rather than being bitter or having a sense of, oh, I should still be doing it. Do you know what I mean? That's gone now, so I'm starting to enjoy going to games and scouting and helping out with little things like that. And again, trying to help lads that I know that are still in the game. And again, just anything you need, you know, like, trying to have, just be there for them and help them on their journey as well. But yeah, I go to quite a few games and watching video games, and yeah, it's good. I mean, it's given me a purpose, I guess, from finishing football, and, you know, it's something that, you know, I'm doing my A licence in the summer, done my talent ID level 1, I'll be doing level 2, trying to just kind of get everything to all my qualifications.
Yeah, your shopping order sort of thing.
Yeah, get everything in order and kind of go from there. So, yeah, that's where I'm at the moment. But, yeah, it was when I went to play non-league football, it was kind of, again, I did it because I was Jem the footballer.
Yeah,
that's all I knew, and it was habit. And I did it just to kind of do it. Like, the enjoyment kind of had gone. But I was going to training and just doing it, because I've been doing it since I was 7 years old. Do you know what I mean?
So
it's different now, and it's good to kind of watch games and step into the new thing, and it's quite... Obviously, Ryan being, like, chief scout and being the transfer guru, it's kind of it's interesting how you like the circle of
now
on that path. So yeah, it's been difficult retiring and being at home all the time is a different kind of thing. But, you know, I love it, and it's we were discussing it, the opportunity to be at home with my kids as much as I have been has been a complete blessing.
Yeah, you're saying you've 1 year old and a 3 year old.
One year old and a 3 year old who are obviously incredible, and if I was playing football every day, I would not have had the relationship I have with them.
Yeah.
A different relationship, do you know what I mean? So it's been good. I think Laura's happy that I'm out of the house a bit more now.
Still,
not on her toes.
So I'm guessing that you didn't retire, or you didn't get a feeling in your mind in the last few years of your career that I want to be a manager. You, did you have that sense of that's the path for me, or are you now still finding your path now?
I'm still finding it. I think it's something that you don't really think about it. You think you're going to play forever. One minute you're 18, you're playing the first team. Next minute you're 33. Your career's not. I still would love to be playing at a high level, like watching Shane yesterday and things like that. But that wasn't my path, and now I'm on something new. And no, I never really thought about it. I always liked the thought of being maybe a coach, working alongside like a gaffer. I always said to Piercy, I'll be your coach. You can be the gaffer. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens and see what opportunities kind of pop up.
Yeah. Have you asked Brian what it's like being a manager at that end then, and how it, you know, the emotion of it and being a Premier League manager?
You haven't got long enough.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it'd be a long convo, but he said a few things kind of, you can't, them decisions of having to pull a shortcomings. Yeah. I don't know how I don't know if I could do that.
Maybe. I can't remember who it was who said it. It might have been one of your, like, when we had like, you know, the old star fan forms and stuff. But I think a Reading manager said the toughest conversations were telling the 16-year-olds they weren't getting the pro contract or something like that. That those were the hardest conversations.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I did that when I was under 17 manager. That was never easy. It's always difficult to do that. But the tough conversations are really important sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, not to have it, just putting a team up on the wall and just not telling the player that you're leaving them out, that's a nightmare. That to me, when I was a player, I played like 44 games out of 44 at Cardiff, and then one day I wasn't in the team on the 45th game, and then he put me back in for the last game, missed one game. I mean, how's that work? And that left a mark on me, I always told the players. I tried to be upfront and tell them, you know, I generally would, you know, it was important to me to have honest conversations, really honest conversations, and but not forever, you know. Sometimes sometimes you have a conversation and you might say to someone, look, you're not playing, and they want to know why am I not playing. I say, well, look, it's because that's how it is. Sometimes you get a gut feeling. That's what I think for this game. And you know, as long as you're not trying to come up with nonsense and come up with all these reasons, sometimes you're better off just to say that is how it is, just get ready for the next game.
Yeah.
And I think players respect that.
No, definitely. I mean, so with Jen then, obviously you guys have spoken and stuff like about his retirement. What's been your advice for retiring from football to Jen?
I haven't given Jem any advice, really. You know, Jem will find his own way. He's a great guy, he's got a great personality. You know, I might have said to him earlier on, just, you know, get on the phone, and if people ask you to do stuff, do it. And I think that's the key, is the more stuff that you do. I found that, I can only talk for myself, I found it in the last year. I'm doing lots of stuff, doing millions of podcasts to the point I don't need to be doing any more podcasts, because I think I've done it to death.
Now, I rung you up before Christmas and you were like, I've had a lot of podcasts.
Yeah,
and I was like, okay, let's have a chat in a few months.
Yeah, and it is too much.
Yeah,
and I think people, you know, and I've talked about my stuff as well, my other stuff apart from football, and I want to keep going on about it. The last thing I want is to become indulgent. It's not an indulgent story.
Nah, of course.
I'm in the happiest place I've ever been in my life today. And, you know, and it's not about running around and having red wine with Alex Ferguson and standing on the line at Anfield. It's just, I can be with my granddaughter. I can have coffee with Jem. I can, you know, I had coffee with Churchy recently, and, you know, I was comfortable when I came back to that for the game that we played in the summer. You know, and, it, you know, just to get myself grounded and just to be in the calmest place I could possibly be in.
Yeah.
That's all right for me.
Yeah, well, I think, to be honest, I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do the podcast, is that, because, you know, obviously all the stuff came out and everything, and the fact that you say you're in a very good headspace now and that you're happy, and do you feel, because I think that the listeners will be delighted by that sort of news, and do you feel that? Do you get the sense that people are happy for you?
Yeah, I do. I really get that sense. And one of the reasons I didn't want to say anything is because I just thought, oh, they don't want to hear this. You know, they really don't want to hear this. But there's a, I think when you have a struggle, and I struggled up to the age of 53 with lots of different things, and from the age of 53 to 61, I'm 62 next month, I've had a great headspace time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, forget all the stuff that you've done, that was your job, but now actually to wake up in the morning looking forward to the day, when I got to a point that I didn't want to wake up. You know, I was at Leeds at one point, I was thinking, this is really hard work, just getting out of bed. And it was a struggle. And I'm not the only one who feels that way. There's lots of people who feel that it's a struggle, but you need to speak, you need to talk, and you need to find a way that works for you, whatever that, which way that is.
Yeah. Do you have like a kind of medium long-term plan for yourself moving forward, or are you just day by day?
That scares me.
Yeah.
Someone said to me, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I just started laughing. You know, where do I see myself in the next minute? I'm happy sat here with you and Jim. It's good enough for me.
Yeah.
You know, all the stuff about ambition and what you want to do. I want to go into a public speaking arena and try to do the best thing I can on that day and deliver a good thing which has got a good message where I might be able to help someone. And if I can do that, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, and you've been getting good feedback from speeches?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, and even though I doubt myself, every time I pick the phone, even a microphone up, I think, oh, they don't want to hear me. That's what I think. And then I just let that thought go.
Yeah.
You know, that feeling of imposter syndrome, that feeling of not feeling good enough. But now I know how to deal with it. I don't fight it anymore. I just accept it for what it is.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And for Gem as well, you say as well, like, you're good. Would you say you're, you know, with the kids and everything, your, like, headspace is kind of where you want it to be, and that's kind of, you take it from there, basically?
So I've been better since... You know, technically I call it a day. I think I've been in a better place. I'm sure my wife would, you know, she's had some tough times with me being at home, and like I say, speaking about it, do you know what I mean? And just putting it out there or how you feel. But yeah, I'm better now. You know, like I say, I'm blessed to have two little girls that keep me busy and, you know, keep me going. But yeah, I like when people go, what do you want to do? I'm like, I don't know. I'm gonna say yes. I'm gonna do things and see where I end. Kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? It's so hard. Like when I speak to people, they're like, "You're a footballer. You're looked at as a footballer." And you kind of think, "Oh, that's what you are. That's all you are." So trying to come away from that, and I'm not Gem the footballer anymore. I'm
Gem.
Yeah. Right. And just go and see what happens, really, yeah.
Could come back to Reading one day?
Who knows?
Who knows, potentially, you know, I love the club. I'm going back yesterday, I'm, you know, getting well with everyone. Like, I love the fans, they were huge for me coming through as a kid. So, yeah, I mean, one day I'd love to work for the club again in some capacity, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, final couple of questions then. Like, in terms of that squad and looking onto it, and obviously that squad, a lot of them are kind of finishing up and everything now. Which of that squad do you think is most likely to be Reading FC manager one day?
Absolutely and utterly no idea.
Not Jimmy Kebbe?
Jimmy, maybe, who knows? Do you know what? You can never call it. You can never call that thing. You just don't know. Mertz is doing bits with Sunderland, and he's been shouted out for doing Graham Mertz. So, yeah. You never know. You never know who comes through and who could be the person. Ian Hart? Andy Griffin, yourself.
Noel Hunt's now under 23, man.
Hunt, he's doing a great job there. Could be Noel, could be Robbo, could be Jem, could be Ledge, could be Feds.
Simon Church is selling CBD oil, so probably unlikely to be them, unless he's another change of career.
Church is a great lad, never know. Coach, really good coach, Church, he would be, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you've got Ledge and Noel in the club system now. I guess they're on that path.
Yeah.
I think. Probably we always laughed about Piercy and how he was like a manager on the pitch kind of thing.
He was.
I don't know. I think the good thing, I think, that when I speak to people, anyone that played under Brian or under, so sorry, since Steve, I don't know too much, but everyone cares so much about the club.
Yeah.
Everyone genuinely like had a great connection with people at the club and would all love to work with them and work for the club again. Like Joby, we've not even mentioned Joby, obviously. Being obviously he was manager at Leyton Orient, and I think Joby would be incredible.
So do I.
As incredible as guy. A manager. I know he's Mr. Sky Sports at the moment, but like, yeah, I'm almost always had the dream of Joe being Lech, kind of, of being like the next, but who knows, maybe one day. I think it'd be incredible. But you just don't know. Football's crazy. You'd be the person you never thought would be a gaffer, would be the gaffer and do really well at it. So,
Probably might be sitting next to him, the chief scout who turned into the promotion winning manager.
If you'd have said to Terry, when I was at Exeter and I was playing for Terry Cooper would have said, the last person in this dressing room who will ever be a manager is Brian McDermott.
Thank you very much for listening to this Tarnas End podcast special over the international break. We'll be back after the Bristol City game, as per usual, with the weekly show. And if you fancy like going through our archives, there's loads of good interviews that we've done over the years with the likes of even going back to Ivo Ingemarsson, Graham Mertie, Phil Parkinson, so many great players over the years. They're all in the Tarnas End archives. You go to the Tarnas End website and onto the interviews section. Lots to go back through and enjoy some real timeless classics there, if I may say so myself. Thank you for listening to this show, though. It's been a great pleasure. And thank you for Brian and Jen for coming on. Come on, you ass.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.